This podcast is a production of The Orchard, a church community located in Aurora, Illinois, whose mission is leading people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. Visit us online at orchardvalleyonline.com.
You know, it's kind of funny if you really start thinking about in life some of the things that we become attached to. You know, no, seriously, I mean, if you think about it, we become attached to all sorts of things, don't we? I mean, let's take cars, for example. Okay, just recently I got rid of this one car that I had. I mean, I had this car way too long, first of all. But it had tons of miles on it. The thing, I mean, when you drove it, it made all kinds of, you know, like satanic noises, you know? And it was funny, whenever I would travel, I would have a rental car, and I'd be like, something's wrong with this thing. It's so quiet, you know? I mean, no AC. The thing was just a mess. It had a really, although it did have a really nice, sexy rust stripe right down the side of it. That was pretty cool. I mean, but it was definitely time to say goodbye to this car. So I'll never forget. We actually donated the car, and I actually now wish I wouldn't have done that because the poor person who gets this car. But you know what's funny about it was that when it was actually time to say goodbye to this car, I got kind of emotional about it. I mean, seriously, you know that feeling? It was like I actually felt kind of bad. Like I feel like I was betraying this car. Like this car had become my friend, you know, for years, and it was like when I drove it, I hated the car. I'd drive it, I'd call it all kinds of names. You stupid car! You piece of junk! You disgust me! But suddenly, when I'm having it towed away, it's like I'm feeling guilty. It's like I'm looking at it going, it's okay, man. It's okay. I will never forget you. Never. You know, we become attached to things in life, don't we? It's kind of like my 8-year-old daughter. She has this deep attachment to this one blanket that she's had since she was born, and it looks like she's had it since she was born. I'm telling you, I mean, and in her mind, nothing can ever replace that blanket. You know, we think like that sometimes, don't we? But you know what's really funny about it? I guess you'd say interesting about it is that if you talk to someone who has ever gone through, you know, maybe a real critical ordeal in their life, maybe something like a tornado hit their house or a fire or something catastrophic like that, and they've lost everything. What's really interesting about it is that oftentimes you see those people with their family clutched in their arms saying things like, you know, it's okay, it was just a house. We can replace it. We can replace the stuff. It's like when something like that happens, you discover that most of the stuff in life is, in fact, replaceable, isn't it? I mean, most is. But of course, what you also learn in that kind of situation is that there are some things that are not replaceable. And one of those things, of course, are the people, the lives of those that you love and you care about. I mean, let's face it, you can replace a house, right? You can replace a car. You can replace a shirt. But you can't replace the people that you love. Which is why I think it hurts so bad when maybe a relationship comes to an end. Even if it's good that that particular relationship comes to an end, it's still really hard, isn't it? Or I think that's why there's so much grief and so much pain when you lose someone in your life. Because see, it's like when they're gone, it's like there's a piece of you that's missing. I mean, there's a void in your life. You know, Jesus one time said and talked about this exact same thing in regards to our relationship with this world around us. In fact, if you have your Bibles this morning, I'd love to take you over to Matthew chapter 5. I want to show you something that Jesus once said. Matthew chapter 5, it's the first book in the New Testament. Matthew 5, and I want to start reading at verse 13. And I'm going to read from the Message paraphrase, so it might look a little different from whatever version you might have this morning. But Matthew 5, verse 13, Jesus says this. He says, "Let me tell you why you are here." He says, you're here to be a salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of this earth. And then in verse 14, he says the same thing, but in a little bit of a different way. He says, here's another way to put it. You're here to be light, bringing out the God colors in the world. And he says, now that I've put you there on a hilltop, on a light stand, shine. I just love how Jesus puts this. I mean, he uses these two metaphors to just paint this really beautiful picture. First, he says, look, you're here to be salt seasoning, to bring out the God flavors in this world. And then he says, you're here to be a light, bringing out the God colors in the world. I mean, in other words, what Jesus is saying here is that his desire, what he wants for you and for me, for the people of God, or you could say the church, what he wants for us is to be the kind of people who add beauty to this world like nothing else can. That's his desire. And not add color or flavor in some sort of, you know, cute, shallowy, religious type of way, but in a way that really brings flavor, in a way that really enhances this world, in a way that really draws out its goodness and brings color to this world that frankly we all know has become very dark and very, very gray. And ultimately in a way that causes his church, that causes his people to become irreplaceable. That's right, irreplaceable. I mean, to literally become, that God literally wants his church and his people to become irreplaceable. And so the question that I think we have to ask ourselves is, how are we doing? Okay, is the church, in general, is the church being irreplaceable? Well, to help answer that question, we hit the streets of Chicago and talk to a few people to find out. Watch this.
My savior?
Good guy.
Love, compassion, diversity.
Easter, loving, bearded, kind.
Got a good opinion of Jesus Christ, that's for sure.
Excellent man, wonderful. Sure, I've had a religion after him.
My savior.
Actually, Jesus was the first punk rocker.
Yeah?
Yeah. He's pretty cool, and I like him a lot.
Savior.
Black.
It's good. Yeah, I think I'm good.
Like why?
It's Jesus. What else would you think of?
Definitely altruistic philanthropy.
Loving, peaceful, sincere.
Hopeful,
yeah.
On their part. They're hoping for something they're not going to get, I believe.
Psycho, uneducated, backward, the South.
I think of somebody that's possibly just a little bit overboard, a little bit extreme.
My Uncle Bob, conservative, white.
Fanatical.
Oh, okay.
Bible thumpers.
Crazy.
People who wear white and, like, kind of glow, but are kind of freaky.
Okay.
Yeah. And, Texas?
I think there's a lot of stigma attached to that word.
I can't answer that. Crazy?
Okay.
Frightening?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, overpowering. Yeah.
You don't want to know.
Somewhat scary? Maybe a little rigid in their dogma and their philosophy.
Nothing too good.
Pretty insightful, huh? And can I tell you something? We did not edit this up to make it look this way. We stood on that street for 45 minutes, and you heard what people said about Jesus. When we asked people about Christians, can I tell you something? We did not get one positive statement. And we didn't even put everybody up. And here's what you need to know, okay? These responses and these perceptions, okay, aren't coming from just a group of people who just had a really lousy day or who were just ticked off at the church that day for some odd reason, okay? I mean, this was not just some isolated case. What you need to understand is that what we saw on the streets of Chicago is a reflection of what's happening all over America and in places all around the world. As a matter of fact, an acquaintance of mine by the name of Dave Kinneman is a researcher who works for an organization called the Barna Group. And over the last couple of years, David has spent a great deal of time researching the attitudes and the beliefs of young people between the ages of 16 and 29 years of age in regards to how they think about and their perception of the Christian faith. And his findings have been very intriguing. In fact, a little over a year ago, David co-wrote a book called Unchristian. And I put the name of the book in your notes. It's a book that would be great for you to read. But he co-authored this book with a guy by the name of Gabe Lyons, and he published his findings. And what David discovered through his research is just astonishing. And I think just further confirms what we just saw in the video a minute or two ago. And that is this, and that's that the perception that most people have, the perception that most non-believers have about Christianity or about those who claim to be Christians is overwhelmingly negative. Okay, for example, okay, according to David's research, the top three most common perceptions that young people have between the ages of 16 and 29 about Christians are these perceptions. Number one, they believe that Christians are anti-homosexual. In fact, 91% of young people say Christians are anti-homosexual. The second perception that they have of Christians is this. Number two, Christians are judgmental. I don't know where they get that from. Come on. I tell you what, they can just, you know. 87% of Christians are not honest about our attitudes and perspectives of other people. And the third most common perception that these young people have of Christians is that Christians are hypocritical. In fact, 85% believe that Christians are hypocritical, saying one thing and doing another. And there's so many others. There were several others, different ones like, you know, the Christians are old-fashioned, Christians are too involved in politics, Christians are insensitive, Christians are boring, they are not accepting of other faiths, and I could go on and on and on and on, but I think you probably get the idea. The bottom line is that Christianity has a perception problem. And chances are, as you sat there and you watched this and as you listened to these stats, there's some of you, you sat here today and you're inside right now, you're thinking to yourself, you know what, I just want to stand up right now and say, no, 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 it's not true. Christians are not like that. We're not all like that. And then my guess is there are probably some others of you who you watch that video and you hear, and you're thinking something like, in fact, you're not just understanding where they're coming from, but you actually find yourself agreeing with every word you just heard. And see, here's the thing. Regardless of what any of us might think, the fact is there is a huge gap. There is a huge gap between the way and how people view Jesus and the way they view the people who are supposed to be representing him. There's a huge gap. I'll never forget a conversation I had with a young woman. Actually, it was one of the ladies on this video. And we're doing these street interviews, of course, and we're standing on the north side of Chicago. And she had answered our question, and she started walking away, and she comes walking back real quick and says, oh, by the way, what is this for anyway? I don't usually like to lie a lot, but I really felt like lying at that moment. It's just for PBS. And so through our conversation, it came up that I was a pastor, you know, which got me that same stare, you know, that same response that I get whenever someone asks what I do, and I tell them I'm a pastor. You know, it's that stare that's like, no, you're not. You are lying. You don't look like a pastor. And then, of course, you know, for the sake of my self-esteem, I assume that that's probably a good thing. I don't know. Anyway, so I told her, I said, yeah, you know, I said, I'm a pastor. It's part of a church that is really interested in trying to find out why there seems to be such a gap between the way people view Jesus and the way they view the people who are supposed to be representing him. And she looks at me and she says this. She goes, oh, so you're a Christian? And I was like, oh, man, what do I say here? You know, I'm like, well, it depends. What do you think of Christians? you know, in fact, I just heard what you think of Christians. You know, and so I didn't quite know what to say, so I thought about it for a second. And I said, well, you know what? I just really like to consider myself a follower of Jesus. And can I tell you something? When I said that to her, this woman, her eyes just lit up. She looks at me. She says, you know what? I have never heard that before. Follower of Jesus. She says, you know what, though? She says, I think that's a really good thing. In fact, she said, based on the little bit that I know about Jesus, he sure seems like someone who'd be worth following. And she went on to ask me about the Orchard, and we talked for a few minutes. I spent a few minutes sharing with her about our community, you guys, and what we're doing here, and about our mission and how we're really interested in really making sure that we're a safe place for people to explore their faith and to ask questions and to just help people along in their journey. Can I tell you something? She was so intrigued by this, and I'll never forget it. She's walking away. She says something that I just cannot stop thinking about. She turns around, she looks at me, and she says, "I sure wish that we had a place like that around here." And can I tell you something? You know what I want to do at that moment? At that moment, I want to start running around and looking for an open storefront, a restaurant, a pub, whatever, and I wanted to start up Orchard Number 2 right then and there. I'm telling you, here's the thing. You know, what's interesting about all of this is that in the midst of all these perceptions that young people have about Christianity and about the church, in the midst of it all is a very deep hunger. There's a very deep spiritual hunger. I mean, here's the thing. The problem is not that people aren't spiritually hungry. I mean, because they are. I mean, you'd pretty much have to live in a hole in the ground not to realize that we live in a very spiritual society. The problem is most of them are not going to the church to have that hunger filled. In fact, not only are they not going to turning to the church, but recently, listen, I heard a stat the other day, it just blew my mind, that says 8 million less people are going to church today than there were 20 years ago going to church. You hear that? 8 million less people going to church today than 20 years ago. And I'll tell you, the reason for that, it's not because Christians are bad people. I mean, believe it or not, there's actually two or three that I get along with really well. I'm kidding. There's actually more like five, okay? But no, seriously, it's not because Christians are bad people. It's not because Christians don't love God. No, listen. The reason that I think we're seeing what we're seeing is because something has happened to the message. Something has happened. And what's happened is that we've complicated the message of Jesus. We have taken a very simple message and we have loaded up a bunch of stuff on top of it and we've complicated it. And so now Christianity now has become more known for the things we're against than the things that we're for. All because we've lost focus on the most important message. In fact, on what Jesus Christ himself said was the most important thing. Oh, Scott, I mean, are you telling me that Jesus actually said what the most important thing is? Yeah, you bet he did. In fact, let me show you. Mark chapter 12, in this passage here, Mark chapter 12, Jesus is asked this exact question. He's asked the question of, okay, what is most important? What's most, okay, out of all of it, what's most important? Except the funny thing is he's not asked about this because this person really wants to know. He's being asked because this person, this religious person, wants to trap Jesus, and they want to make Jesus look foolish. And so what does Jesus say? Let me show you. So he asks them, what's the most important thing? Jesus says this, Mark chapter 12. He says, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. Okay, that's a pretty good answer. I mean, that's an answer we're all familiar with because he was quoting from the Jewish scriptures. Okay, but then all of a sudden, Jesus, he just throws out this huge curveball. And he continues his answer and he says this, the second is equally important, love your neighbor as yourself. And then on top of all of it, it's like Jesus just adds the cherry on top. He says, no other commandment is greater than these. I mean, that's it. Jesus says, look, it's all about two things. Two things. Love God and love people. Oh, and by the way, they're equally important. Which just sometimes makes our brain go tilt, right? Because don't you think, I mean, when you think about loving God, you think, well, there's nothing greater than loving God. But Jesus, no. The two go hand in hand. And in other words, once you wipe away all of the additives and all the preservatives and all the other stuff that religion has added to Christianity, what you'll find at the core is a very simple message that says this, love God, love people, period. In other words, it really doesn't matter how religious you and I might think we are. If we don't love God and love people, none of it matters. It doesn't matter how much of the Bible you can quote from memory. It doesn't matter how great you can pray. You could pray in the King James vernacular. But if you don't love God and love people, it doesn't matter. And so that's why, here at the Orchard, our mission is to help you grow, very simply, in your love for God and your love for people. I mean, look, there's a lot of things we could talk about here at the Orchard that would turn into some fun debate, you know, or it'd be fun to talk about or whatever, but that wouldn't necessarily help you grow in your love for God and your love for people. I see, that's part of the reason we've decided we're gonna keep things very, very simple here at the Orchard. I mean, it's why we've made a decision that we're going to do everything we can to challenge you, okay? See, it's why I realize that my role isn't just about getting up here and talking and sharing some interesting stories from the Bible, but it's also about pushing you a little bit. It's about challenging you to keep taking those steps forward in your life. It's about helping you to take some risks in your life and to step out in faith as you follow in the way of Jesus. See, that's why what excites me the most is not when someone comes up to me and says, "Hey, Scott, that message was good. It was really funny. Hey, you know what? Thank you. But you know what? No, listen. I mean, if that's what it's all about, I mean, if it's just about really just being funny and making people feel a little bit motivated, then I might as well do something else. I might as well go work on a cruise ship because, I mean, frankly, I'd probably make a lot more money and there'd be a lot less stress involved, right? No, listen. What really excites me, I mean, what wakes me up early in the morning, what really drives me, what really gets my heart pumping is when someone walks up to me or when someone emails me and says things to me like, "Scott, let me tell you something. After your talk last weekend, I begin changing the way I think about this person. Scott, as a result of my time here at the Orchard, I'm changing the way that I handle some relationships in my life. Scott, my life is changing. Things that have held me bondage for years, habits that I've had for years, all of a sudden, these desires are starting to change." I'll tell you what, that is what I've devoted my life to. And that's what so many of you said, you know what, that's what we want to be a part of. Because see, that is being irreplaceable. I mean, when you make that kind of impact on people's lives as a church, the church is being irreplaceable. I mean, that's why a few years ago, we came to the realization that the last thing our community needed was just another church. And so we decided, you know what, the Orchard is going to be different. It's going to be different. And the Orchard is going to be a place where you and I, where we can invite our unchurched friends, where we can invite our unchurched family members, where they can, a place they can show up regardless of where they're at in their journey, and that we would do everything we can to help remove those barriers and to help tear down those walls that so many people have when it comes time to attend church. See, here's the thing, listen. When you understand that the church, listen, this is huge, I hope you get this. When you understand that the church does not exist for itself, but rather that the church exists to truly make a difference in this world, suddenly what happens is you begin to understand that what we do here week in and week out is not just about what we like. It's not just about how I think or you think church should be done. It's not just about our own personal preferences. No, listen. It's about doing whatever we need to do. It's about being creative. It's about using innovative ways and resources to influence and to reach people with the message of Jesus, so that we can help people continually take steps forward. Because again, you know what? That's what Jesus says it's all about, right? That's how we become irreplaceable. By simply loving God and loving people. And can I tell you something? If you've been around here for any length of time, you know that it's happening, isn't it? It's happening. I mean, that's exactly what God is doing in our church community here at the Orchard. He is making us irreplaceable. And can I tell you how I know that? I know that because I hear story after story after story of people's lives. Not just stories about God healed my dog. No, that's great. Praise God for your dog. But I mean stories about, and God does care about your dog, okay? Don't email me about that, okay? Yeah, because Terry would hate to have to get your email. Anyway, I know that because when I take a step back and when I begin to look at what God has done, can I tell you something? It just absolutely blows my mind. It's crazy what God is doing here. I mean, for example, do you realize, and if you're new here, as far as you know, this is the way it's always been, but let me tell you something, it hasn't always been this way. I mean, if you take a look over the last few years of what God has done here, it will freak you out in a good way. I mean, do you realize how many people we have every week and walking through our church doors? See, some of you don't realize this. We have three services. This isn't the only service we do. No, we have three of these. In fact, let me show you. I want to just show you something that'll help paint a picture of what we've seen happen these last few years. Look, okay, starting back, I'm going to show you on the screens here. The guy in the back says, no, you got to slow down with that, because I couldn't, when I hit the button, the things didn't come up right away. Okay, so, in 2000, no, okay, starting in 2003, I've only had one coffee today. In 2003, listen, our average weekend attendance in 2003 was this, 289. We averaged that per weekend. That's adults and children, 289 people, period. 2004, up to 376. 2005, 457. 2006, 549. 2007, 608. And get this. Since the beginning of this year, our weekend average attendance has been 850 people who have been walking through these church doors. Isn't that exciting? Now, here's what you have to understand, okay? You've got to understand, this is very unusual. It's very unusual. Some of you have come from churches that have grown, but I'm going to tell you something. First of all, the average church in America right now, the average church in America is not growing. In fact, if anything, the average church in America, statistics will show you that the average church in America is actually declining. It's declining. And here's the thing, the ones that are growing, the numbers that they report of churches that are growing at a rate of maybe 2 to 3% a year, whereas what we've seen here at the Orchard is an average of 25% growth every year for the past 4 or 5 years. I'm telling you, the Orchard is becoming irreplaceable. Not because I'm so great, not because any of our staff, you all are really great, but it's because God is great and God is doing something. I'm telling you, the Orchard is becoming irreplaceable in so many ways. In fact, another way that the Orchard has become irreplaceable is in areas like people's giving. Can I tell you something about giving? We don't make big deal. We don't stand up here and cry and tell you we're going to go down if you don't give, or anything like that. We just simply say, here's what God says. Now it's up to you to respond. And can I tell you something? When people begin surrendering the area of their finances over to God, I'm going to tell you something. Oftentimes, that's the last part of people's lives they give over to God, because it's a tough area to let go of, isn't it? But I'm telling you, when people begin to give, you know God is doing something. In fact, I want to show you something. On average, we've seen our giving increase 20% every single year for the past 5 years. Now, the reason I'm showing you this is because here's the thing. If all you're doing is growing in attendance, big deal. I mean, you can be a big church and not be healthy. You understand that, right? But I do believe this, that a church that is healthy will be a growing church. It's like a body that is healthy is going to grow. It's going to function. And so in the areas of our giving, 20% growth every single year for the past 4 or 5 years. And you know what? That's not just people who are giving more. Okay, that's more people who are involved in giving. In fact, our weekly giving units, when you fill out one of those giving cards, you suddenly become a giving unit. but we count those, and so we've kept track of that. The number of people giving each weekend has averaged 21% increase every year for the past 5 years. We're also becoming irreplaceable in our missions giving, which results in being irreplaceable in places around the world. We've seen that increase. Listen to this. This is going to blow your mind. 151% each year over the past 4 or 5 years. 151% increase given to missions every year for the past 4 or 5 years. Isn't that exciting? Yeah, thank you. You clap? Okay, now, same thing with baptisms. That's what it's all about, is seeing people's lives change. Baptism is an outward profession of what's happened in here. We're becoming irreplaceable in the spiritual lives of people, as we've seen a 52% average increase each year over that same time frame. And I could go on and on. Same thing with the numbers of people who are serving. I'm telling you, it's been right across the board. God is growing his church. God is doing something. God is making the Orchard irreplaceable. And you know what that tells me? That tells me that not only is the Orchard experiencing healthy growth, but God is causing this church to make an impact in people's lives that if we didn't exist, perhaps that impact would not be made. God is using us in some extraordinary ways. And here's the thing. While it's not all about the numbers, okay, you got to understand and remember that each number represents a person, right? Each number represents a person's life that is being changed. In fact, I want to read you an email that I received a few days ago from a person whose life has taken just a new direction since becoming a part of the Orchard. And this just really, it just really grabbed me. I thought it was a great email. And they wrote this: Scott, God recently reminded me of a little girl that I once knew. She was happy, had a great imagination. She loved her creator, sang to her God, and never doubted that he was pleased with her. That little girl was me some 45 years ago. I knew back then that God loved me, and I never doubted that my little songs or prayers pleased him. Then I was introduced to religion. And she goes on to write this: religion taught me something else. It taught me that I could never please God. In my mind, I was constantly getting saved and then losing it, getting saved and losing it. Finally, in my late teens, I decided it was simply too hard to be a Christian, so I gave up. Years of emptiness passed. I did not fit in anywhere. I didn't fit in with the sinners because I'd feel guilty about doing bad things. I didn't fit in with the Christians because I was not perfect and I sinned. Ultimately, I became angry with God. How could he create a person with a desire to know him yet fail to give that same person the power to be perfect and accepted? Finally, I remember asking God to just let me die. What was the sense of letting a person live out hell on earth and then condemning them to hell for eternity? Why not just end the hell on earth now? Finally, about 2 years ago, I started to get honest with myself. I realized I did not like my life. I did not like who I had become. I was empty. Last year, my daughter and her fiancé invited me to attend the Orchard with them. Despite the fact that I did not want anything to do with church or Christians, I finally gave in and went, and I've been attending ever since. Now listen to this. Not only that, but every time I've attended, I felt like the sermon was prepared just for me. I know that's not the case, but it sure felt like it, she says. I have shed more tears this past year than I've probably shed in my entire life. What's with all the crying? God has used the Orchard to bring me back to him. I've been reading the Bible, praying. I believe God is changing my heart and my mind. God has been teaching me about his grace. I feel like I now have a purpose in my life. I'm starting to dream again, something I haven't done for years. So I want to say thank you for obeying God. I never want to go back to the way I was before. Thank you. That deserves a hand clap, huh? And here's the thing. What you need to know is that thank you at the end of that email is not just a thank you to me, it's not just a thank you to our staff, but it's a thank you to every single one of you who have poured your time, your energy, and your resources into helping make the Orchard an irreplaceable church community. And so to all of you, okay, listen, for all of you, on behalf of her, on behalf of literally hundreds and hundreds of other stories that you have not even heard today, and one day thousands of stories, I want to say thank you to all of you for being a part of the Orchard community and making this an irreplaceable church, because this place could not be doing what it's doing without every single one of you doing what you do here every single week. And so I want to put my hands together and clap for you. Now, another way that the Orchard's become irreplaceable is through all the noise that you all have made this last year. You all are a rowdy, noisy bunch. I'm kidding. You are actually, you guys aren't so much today. But in case you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm referring to something that we launched a little over a year ago called Making Noise. Now, our Making Noise initiative has been all about making noise in four areas: family ministries, weekend gatherings, local missions, and staffing. And let me just tell you something. There's been a lot of noise made these last 12 months. And let me just update you all on this real quick. Now, if you're visiting today, don't leave, but this isn't necessarily for you, okay? Because I want you to see some stuff that we're getting ready to show you. But let me tell you, there's been a lot of noise made this last year. And let me just say, first of all, our goal in Making Noise, a lot of you will remember this, we said, okay, we want to raise this year $250,000 above our regular giving budget, our regular budget. And of course, as is always the case, your response was just phenomenal. And so get this, we didn't get $250,000 committed. No, you know what we got committed? We got $267,000 committed. And isn't that awesome? And so now that goal, our goal was to raise that within 12 months. Well, here we are 12 months later, and the great news, listen to this, this is huge. The great news is that over 70% of that money that's been committed has come in. You all have been able to do that. And that's right about $196,000 have been given to Making Noise. So that deserves also a hand clap this morning. Well, of course, here's the thing, okay? We know that any time you do a long-term commitment, which 12 months isn't really even that long, but in today's economy, 12 months is kind of long, isn't it? But whenever you make a long-term commitment, you can never really predict how things are going to go financially. I mean, as a church, we rely on people's giving. So you just don't know. I mean, you really pray and you trust God that things are going to go well. But unfortunately, as we all know, this last few months have been challenging. I mean, in our lives, in our economy, the economy has been hit. I mean, gas prices. You look at the stock market, real estate, housing, which means that an awful lot of us felt it in one way or another. I'm sure almost every one of us in this room have felt it to some degree. And so, over these past 12 months, what we've seen happen is this: during these last 12 months, there were about 20 plus weekends that we did not hit weekly budget. Okay, well, thankfully, and see, this just goes to show God's goodness to us, okay? Thankfully, on the weeks that we weren't able to hit budget, because we have Making Noise happening, we were able to borrow out of Making Noise to keep our budget going so that we have not had to miss a beat. And so that's a great thing. You know, you kind of hate to do that, but it's like, okay, well, what do? We got to survive. We've got a mortgage. We've got insurance, we've got electricity, we've got all these things happening. And so here's the thing, though, I want you to know. Even with having to borrow money out of Vision money, I got to tell you, we've still been able to make tons of progress. I'm going to show you in a second. And even though we have not been able to be as aggressive as we'd like to be with some of our projects, we're still on track. We're still on track to completing everything that we set out to do 12 months ago. In fact, just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about, I want you to watch the screens for just a minute or two. Ago, people from all over this community at all different places in their spiritual journey came together with their hearts and their faith united to make some noise. And let me tell you, that's exactly what's happened over these last 12 months. We've made a lot of noise. And I want to say thank you to each of you for your faithful and your generous support, because I'll tell you, we've been able, because of that, to make some tremendous progress in four mission critical areas, including the area that you're sitting in right now, our worship space, our auditorium. In the last few months, we've added 3 high-definition projectors, 2 new side screens, and of course, 1 giant theater-style screen that's enabled us to take our video technology and our graphics to a whole new level. Through Making Noise, we've also been able to upgrade our video editing capabilities, and get this, as of this last weekend, we had the opportunity to purchase and install a brand new state-of-the-art house and lighting system. And you know what the best part of it all is? We were able to pay cash for all of it. No debt. It's been paid for through your generosity in Making Noise. The second area that we've talked about Making Noise in and that I'm really excited about is in the area of our family ministries. Over these next several months, we're going to be making a substantial investment in the room that's currently known as Wahabu Land. And I'm telling you, over these next several months, this room is going to take on a whole new look and feel. We're going to invest in technology that's going to help us create an incredibly creative space where our kids can continue to learn about God's love in fresh and innovative ways. Man, I can't wait. Making Noise has also made it possible for us these last few months to make some real critical hires for our staff. One of those areas is a full-time individual who now serves on our lead team and a part-time staff person who serves in our Orchard Kids Ministry. Thank you so much. Last but not least, I'm excited about the opportunity that we've had to invest in local missions. Local simply means global and local, and I'm talking about a handful of partnerships that the Orchard has established in places like Thailand and Azerbaijan and even places right here locally in Aurora. And I'll tell you what, the most exciting thing is, in the last 6 months, we've had the opportunity through Making Noise and through other mission initiatives to invest over $30,000 to make some noise in global missions. And I'm excited about that, and I look forward to what's ahead. But the thing that excites me the most are the lives that have been impacted and changed as a result of making noise. I mean, who can help but think of our barbecue and baptism last summer? I mean, over 100 people who went public with their faith in Jesus Christ and got water baptized. What an awesome event. I also can't help but think in the fall how we started our Saturday night gatherings, and now reaching a group of people that, who knows, we may never have had the opportunity to reach otherwise. And of course, who can forget Advent Conspiracy? Man, this last Christmas, it was such a joy to watch as literally hundreds of families made the decision to resist the consumeristic pull of the holidays and instead invest relationally with their families and ultimately help us as a church community to invest in clean water projects and local needs right here in Aurora. This past spring, of course, we had an awesome Easter weekend, one of our greatest outreach opportunities of the year, as literally thousands of people come out to the orchard. And of course, this year with our Easter egg drop, four powerful services that were packed out with people. I mean, I'll tell you what, God did some great things. And here we are today, June of 2008, and we're getting ready to launch a brand new series where we've partnered together with over 1,200 churches all around the world to begin a series called One Prayer. Wow, what a year this has been. And let me tell you, all that's happened over this past year has happened because of your faithfulness and your generosity. I'm telling you, I am blown away at how God is using the Orchard to not just make an impact here in Aurora, but even in places around the world. I'm telling you, isn't it great to be a part of something that's making noise? And I'll tell you what, in the days, weeks, and months ahead, you and I are going to have an opportunity to make noise like we've never made it before. This is awesome, isn't it? I mean, you take a look back at the last year, and I'll tell you, I mean, whenever I see these kind of things or we put these together, I'm just reminded over and over again that we really are a part of something that is really amazing. I mean, we really are a part of something that's so much bigger than just any of us as individuals, and that is really causing us to be an irreplaceable church. Now, you heard me say earlier that Making Noise was originally planned to go for 12 months, and what we're going to do, now that these 12 months are over, and since we know it's been tight for many of you who've committed but haven't been able to fulfill your commitments, what we're going to do is we're going to extend Making Noise out through the end of the year. We're going to do that because we really just think that'd be helpful for a lot of people. And actually, there's three reasons why we're doing it. One, we haven't met our goal yet. And you know, it's funny because a lot of church consultants would say, well, you know, don't expect to get any more than about 70%. But I don't want to be a statistic. I want us to be able to bring in every dime and more of what was committed. I want us to be able to celebrate and say we completed what we started. And so, first of all, I just want to say for those of you who've committed but you haven't been able to fulfill that commitment, don't feel bad about that. We understand. But we want to give you more time. And so our hope is that by extending this out an additional 6 months, it'll make it easier for you to do that, okay? Secondly, we know that there's a whole bunch of you who are brand new to the Orchard, and you've just recently come in, and we want to give you an opportunity to be a part of Making Noise as well. And if you'd like to join in, we want to invite you to. There's no pressure. There's no obligation. We're not going to put a guilt trip on you. We're not going to have anybody at the door threatening you on your way out or anything like that. Well, there might be, I don't know, a couple of you guys look pretty mean back there. But no, and then lastly, there are many of you who you have made commitments and you fulfilled those commitments, to which we are so, so grateful. Thank you for that. But I also know there might be some of you who would like to make an additional commitment to Making Noise. And so I want to invite all of you to continue to be a part of helping the Orchard be an irreplaceable church, continue making noise. And here's the deal, as that happens, guys, listen, as that happens, not only are we going to accomplish our goal with Making Noise, but we're also going to be positioned to get a huge head start on a bunch of things that I'm excited to be able to share with you over these next couple of months in regards to the future of the Orchard, what God has for us next. I'm telling you guys, we have some exciting days ahead. And as we join together in a spirit of faith and unity, and as we continue to allow God to stretch us and challenge us, I'm telling you, we're going to continue to see God do exactly what it is we're praying for, which is, God, make us irreplaceable. Let's pray that right now, can we? Would you bow your heads with me? God, this morning, we just want to come to you right now and say thank you so much for what you're doing here. I mean, you know, God, when I think about all the stuff we've been able to do and that we have planned to do, I mean, even things like the lighting and the video stuff and what we're going to be doing in the kids' spaces, God, what I realize is that those are simply tools for us to be able to reach people. This building that you've given us, this campus, this beautiful place, this is a tool that you've given us to reach people. And God, we want to be the best stewards of all of this that we can be. God, thank you for the opportunity we have to invest in something like this, not just through giving, but to invest in the time that we in the time that we engage in serving and inviting people to experience the Orchard. God, thank you for that opportunity. And God, I imagine that when a church becomes irreplaceable, that the people who make up that church are going to become irreplaceable in their lives, in their workplaces, in their neighborhoods, in their families, God, in every area of their life. So that's our prayer today. Would you just take a moment right now, and would you say, God, would you make me irreplaceable? Just whisper that prayer to him. God, would you make me irreplaceable? And God, would you do that for us as a church community? God, would you make it so that if the Orchard one day ever said, you know what, we're closing our doors, that there would be people from our community who would protest, who would stand and say, please don't leave. We need you here. That's our prayer, God. Please continue to make us irreplaceable. Amen.